Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yechezkel, Perek, Mem Zalad, Chapter 44. In our last Perek, Yechezkel experienced the Kavod of Hashem filling the Beit HaMikdash. The Kavod of Hashem came in from the east, and now Yechezkel looks over at the east gate that the Kavod of Hashem came from, and Pasuk Aleph, Ve'yeshivos hi derech shar HaMikdash HaChitzon HaPonekatim V'hu Sagur. He brought me back by the way of the outer gate of the sanctuary, which looks towards the east, and Yechezkel looks, and the gate is shut. And what does it mean? Pasuk bet, Vayomer Adonai Hashem, Hashar hazeh sagur yihyeh. This gate is going to be shut. Lo yiftach, it will never be open. Ve'ish lo yavobo, and no man is going to enter it. It's not going to open and close. Ki Hashem Elokei Yisrael babo, that is the gate that Hashem has entered from. Vahaya sagor, and now it is going to be shut. The shutting of the gate, according to Yechiel Tzvi Moskovitz in the Dot Mikra, represents the way that we see that Hashem will stay with the Jewish people now leolam, forever. The gate that he came in from is now shut. He will no longer leave the Beit HaMikdash. He is with us forever. The shutness of the gate also reminds the reader that the Mikdash belongs to Hashem. It is a place of spirituality, a utopia, a place that's separate from people. Only Hashem can open it, and only He can close it. As He says in the Pasuk, V'ish lo yavobo, this isn't a gate for people to come in and out of. This isn't a place for people. This isn't a place for the common man. This is the place for Hashem. It is His space. It belongs to Him. It is Kadosh, holy. With this beautiful and inspiring introduction, what comes next, Hashem's message to Yechezkel, is actually very surprising. Pasuk Vav, V'amarta el Meri el Beit Yisrael, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim, Rav Lachem Mikol Tovateichem Beit Yisrael, say to yourself, to the rebellious B'nai Yisrael, and we're just cringing as readers, why are you calling B'nai Yisrael rebellious? Isn't this in the section of the Nechama when Hashem only says positive messages to B'nai Yisrael? And yet this is not a positive message. And the message is, Rav Lachem Mikol Tovateichem Beit Yisrael, it's too much of all your abominations, House of Israel. Pasuk Zayin, V'haviyachem b'nei nechar, orli leiv, orli basar, liot b'mikdashi, l'chalalo et beiti. Yechezkel speaks about things that they did during Bayit Rishon. You brought in foreigners, people that were orli leiv, uncircumcised in heart, meaning they did bad deeds, v'orli basar, and uncircumcised in flesh. These are people that are not Jewish, they don't have a brit milah. Liot b'mikdashi l'chalalo. They were in my sanctuary to profane it, to profane et beiti, my house. B'krivchem et lachmi, chelev, dam, v'yefiru et briti, el kol tovoteichem. Inside my house, when you offer my bread and the chilev, the fat and the blood, meaning when you do all these korbanot, the people that are doing these korbanot have broken my covenant. They broke my brit, and you will remember that is how Yechezkel started this book, 30 years. 30 years from what? And one of the things we counted from was the finding of the Sefer Torah in the time of Yoshiyahu, the ultimate brit, the covenant that they made with Hashem, and says Hashem to B'nai Yisrael through Yechezkel, you're a Beit Meri, you're a rebellious people. You brought people into my house who broke my covenant. Those were the people who were doing the service in the Beit HaMikdash to add to all the other abominations that they were doing. And Rabbeinu Lau explains that we thought these prakim were nechama, were a comfort when we're reading about the rebuilt Beit HaMikdash. And they are, in a sense that they promise a good future. They have what to look forward to, that B'nai Yisrael are not going to be stuck in Galut forever, that their past sins will not haunt them. They can do tshuva, but that does not mean that they're doing good deeds now, and it certainly doesn't mean that they have done tshuva for the bad deeds that they did during the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Yechezkel's vision of the Geula, of this redemption, of this third Beit HaMikdash, as we discussed in Parak 36, in the Nevuah towards Harei Yisrael, is the idea that Hashem is redeeming B'nai Yisrael for the sake of His own name, because of Kiddush Hashem, and not because they deserve it. And because of that, Yechezkel's vision of the Beit HaMikdash is different than Bayit Rishon. It will be separate from the people. And Yechezkel now looks at the leaders of the Beit HaMikdash in the past, the Levim and the Kohanim, and he sees that they failed terribly in their jobs. Pasuk 9 discusses the Levium and says the Pasuk, sorry, I'm reading actually now from Pasuk 10. Ki im halavim asher rachaku me'alai, bita'u Yisrael asher ta'u me'alai, acharei gilu lehem nas'u avonam. Rashi explains that the Levium of the past were the ones that were leading the charge for Avodah Zarah. They didn't just do bad things. They made other people do bad things. And we saw one example of this was way back in the story of Pesel Micha, where the Levi in the story became a Kohen for idolatry. And even though this pasuk doesn't say so explicitly, Rashi does assume that the Levium repented. Nevertheless, says Rashi, they aren't trusted anymore to go into the Mikdash. The Levium had a job in the Beit HaMikdash, and part of that job was to be part of the service of the Korbanot, and the other part of the job were to teach the people. And they failed in both, but they were connected. The reason they failed in their service of the Korbanot was because they were failing the people. They weren't teaching the people the right thing. They themselves were engaged in abominations and idolatry. And therefore, says Rashi, they're going to be, in this Beit HaMikdash, demoted. Instead, they're going to be gatekeepers and watchmen. So they will be in the Beit HaMikdash, but they are positions that place them outside, on the outside of the Beit HaMikdash, not on the inside. The next pasuk adds that they can also be the ones who slaughter the animals for the Ola, which Rashi explains is a job that even non-Levium in the time of Bayit Rishon were allowed to do. So they can do jobs, but not the kinds of jobs that they did before. And the Kohanim, explains Yechezkel in Pasuk 13, also failed their duties. And now reading according the Pasuk according to the reading of the Malbim, says Pasuk Yud Gimel, Lo yigashu elai lekahen li, legeshet al kol kadshai, al kadshei hakdashim, v'nasu klimatam v'tovatam asher asu. They should not come close to me to execute the office of the Kohen to me, nor should they come near to any of my holy things, to the things that are most holy, but they shall bear their shame and their abominations, which they have committed. The Kohanim themselves became a stumbling block for Bnei Israel. They, the ones who were supposed to be the role models, they didn't allow Bnei Israel to reach their full potential. They themselves were roped into the world of idolatry and corruption, and they pulled the people along with them. No longer will they have such responsibility in my new Beit HaMikdash. They will not be the ones to bring the korbanot, to eat the kachim. They will be relegated, as Pasuk 14 explains, to be keepers of the house, Shomrei Abayit, which the Malbim reads as ones who wash the floors and who ready the utensils, almost, says the Malbim, like a Kohen who's not allowed to work in the Beit HaMikdash. A Kohen who's pasul for kahuna is allowed to do certain things, and that's what the Kohanim will be allowed to do. So like the Levium, the Kohanim will be demoted. They'll be allowed to come in, but not allowed to do the service. So who is going to do the service in this Beit HaMikdash? And now Yechezkel explains, the only ones who are allowed to go into the Kodesh, to the inner part of the Beit HaMikdash, are the Bnei Tzadok, both the Kohanim and the Levium. But says Pasuk Tetvav, verse 15, V'hakohanim v'halevi'im Bnei Tzadok, the Kohanim and Levium, the descendants of Tzadok, asher shamru et mishmeret mikdashi b'ta'ot Bnei Yisrael me'alai. There were people who kept my laws, who kept the charge of my sanctuary when all of Bnei Yisrael went astray from me. Hema yakrivu alai l'chartini. They can come close to me to serve me. V'amdu l'fanai l'hakriv l'chela v'dam ne'um Hashem Elokim. Only the Bnei Tzadok were loyal to Hashem during Bayit Rishon. Only they were uncorrupted, and therefore, in Bayit Shlishi, only they will be able to stand before me and offer me the korbanot, says Hashem. Now, who are these Bnei Tzadok? Why do they take up such a prominent place in Yechezkel's vision? So, Tzadok occupies a large role in the life of David HaMelech, which is much earlier than this. We're talking hundreds of years earlier. He, along with Eviatar HaKohen, who was the other important Kohen in the time of David, brought the Aron back from its exile all the way up to Yerushalayim. And it was Tzadok who stayed loyal to David when Eviatar, the Kohen Gadol, joined the rebellion of Adoniel. And it was Tzadok who anointed Shlomo as king. Rav Benny Lau explains that this family of Tzadok distinguished themselves for their loyalty, both in the times of David and Shlomo, and they continued to have this quality of loyalty. While all the other Kohanim were corrupted and worshipped idolatry, they did not. They stayed loyal to Hashem, just as their forefather Tzadok stayed loyal to David during the rebellion of Adoniel and everything else that happened to David. And actually, in an interesting twist of history, Rabbi Lau points out, the Tzedukim, who we know as the ones who rejected the Torah Shebaal Peh, and they were part of this movement of Bayit Sheni against the Prushim, the ones that became Chazal, they were called Tzedukim because they were from Tzadok. Now, this wasn't all the descendants of Tzadok, it was a small group, but it was the same quality, Rabbi Lau points out, of loyalty that they took in the wrong direction. It led them to reject these new interpretations of the Torah, and they stayed loyal to the text that they had. But these B'nai Tzadok, that's just kind of an interesting tidbit of what happens to some of these B'nai Tzadok in Bayit Sheni, which is after Yechezkel's time, but before Bayit Shlishi that he's envisioning. These B'nai Tzadok that Yechezkel envisions are, like the Beit HaMikdash itself, uncorrupted and separate from the nation. They really went through the test of fire. Everyone else around them was corrupt, and they were not. And the next psukim described their service, which is interesting because it's different in a certain ways from the way the Kohen service is described in the Torah. So one example of what the B'nai Tzadok would do comes up in Pasuk 17. V'haya bivo'am el sharei ha'chatzer ha'pnimit, bigdei pishtim ilbashu. So when they come into the gates of the inner court, meaning when they come into the Beit HaMikdash, they are going to wear linen garments. And we already know that in Yechezkel's last vision of Jerusalem, in Parak 8-11, he saw that man in the linen garments. And we talked about that represented this Kohen on Yom Kippur. So now the B'nai Tzadok are going to wear these linen garments, and it says, "Lo ya'ale alehem semer bishartam b'sharei ha'chatzer ha'pnimit v'abayta." They should not wear any cloth that's comprised of any wool. So meaning they can't have any wool and linen clothing while they're inside the gates of the inner court and within the Beit HaMikdash. Yechezkel, when he imagines a Kohen, like the one he saw in his vision, dressed only in linen. And he specifies that no wool at all could be associated with them. However, when the commandments about what a Kohen wears, when we have that from the Torah in Shmot Parak 28, it describes the clothes of the Kohen Gadol, as being made of wool and linen. The only one who wears only linen is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. And that's a difference between here, when Yechezkel seems to say that all the Kohanim are going to wear just this linen clothing. And another example comes up in Pasuk 22, where Yechezkel talks about different laws about these Kohanim B'nai Tzadok. And he says, V'almana u'grusha lo yichu lahem l'nashim, ki im betulot mizera Beit Yisrael, v'almana asher tia almana mikohen yikachu. They shouldn't marry these Kohanim, a widow or a divorced woman, but rather they should only marry women who are virgins from B'nai Yisrael, and a widow should be taken from the Kohen. So in the Psukim in Vayikra 21:7, they do restrict a Kohen from marrying a divorcee, and they are allowed to marry a widow. While in Yechezkel's vision, it restricts the Kohen from marrying anyone who's not a virgin. And Rashi attempts to harmonize the sources and explains that these psukim are actually talking about a Kohen Gadol. The first one is speaking about the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, who does wear only linen. And the second one is also talking about the Kohen Gadol, who does not marry a divorcee, but a regular Kohen would continue to marry a divorcee and would continue to wear the wool and linen clothing. Radak, on the other hand, takes the approach that Yechezkel is speaking about regular Kohanim, B'nai Tzadok, but Yechezkel has a different vision of how they will act in the future. Now, Yechezkel is not negating any of the Torah's commands. He's just adding chumrot. He's adding more stringencies. The Mishkan was corrupted by the Kohanim in the time of Chafni and Pinchas, all the way back, way, way early when they had their Mishkan. The Mishkan got destroyed. This led to Chafni and Pinchas were the Kohanim of the Mishkan, the sons of Eli, and they were terrible. And this led to the Aron getting taken and the Mishkan getting destroyed, as is referenced in Yirmiyahu Perek Zion. And then during Bayit Rishon, the Beit HaMikdash was also corrupted by the Kohanim, who we saw in Yirmiyahu Perek 26. They tried to kill Yirmiyahu, and we see all through Sefer Yirmiyahu how the Kohanim were really corrupted, and Yechezkel talks about it here. They did idolatry. They taught the people idolatry. Yechezkel, over and over in his book, blames the leaders for being corrupt and teaching the people corruption. And Yechezkel doesn't want that for his Beit HaMikdash. He wants his Beit HaMikdash to be pure. And therefore, according to this view, every Kohen who works in the Beit HaMikdash will be parallel to the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur, both in their strictures and what they can't do, and in how they carry themselves and how they look. While they won't actually all be Kohanim Gedolim on Yom Kippur, the laws that they observe will remind them to carry themselves with that type of gravitas and to realize that their job carries so much holiness. This Beit HaMikdash that Hashem shows Yechezkel is going to be free from corruption. And that's why Hashem will be able to shut that gate and stay forever. Because the leaders, it's going to start from there. The leaders themselves will not be involved in anything that is not kadosh while they're in the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash will be a pure space. And people will look to it, and they'll look to the pure Kohanim as role models. And the role of Kohanim is not just to work in the Beit HaMikdash, but to be models of Kedusha, of holiness, as they teach the Jewish people the difference between Kodesh and Chol, how to construct their own boundaries around what is holy and what is mundane. This parak begins with the shutting of the east gate behind Hashem, a mark of the permanence of the kavod that fills the Beit HaMikdash, and it ends with the purity of the B'nai Tzadok, who do the rituals and interact with the holiness of Hashem. These Kohanim, each one who acts like a Kohen Gadol, represents the holiness of the space and the separation of the Beit HaMikdash off from the rest of the world. This Beit HaMikdash will last forever. This one will never again be corrupted by sin. Thank you for learning together, Le'ilo Nishmas, Barbara Atlas, Bracha Bas Avraham. She was a beacon of light to all who knew her. Barbara's kindness and generosity had no bounds.